Hey, TrumpCast listeners, Virginia Heffernan here. So you're about to hear a short excerpt from today's episode of TrumpCast. It is a teaser. To listen to the full episode, you need to be a Slate Plus member. We've started making 1 in 4 TrumpCast episodes available exclusively to Slate Plus members. We hope you'll join Slate Plus to hear the show and to support the work we do here at Slate every day. You get no ads on any of our podcasts, extra content from other Slate shows like Slow Burn and the Slate Political Gab Fest, and all kinds of other swag and bonuses and excitement. So sign up now at slate.com/TrumpCast Plus to get every single episode of TrumpCast in full. It's only $35 for the first year. And as always, thanks for listening. So the drum roll is sounding for more indictments from the Office of the Special Counsel. The Twitter peanut gallery is gearing up. But are indictments really coming? Should we be so bloodthirsty? There's something a little unseemly about it. And better yet, who is in the hot seat for an indictment? Here to speculate wantonly on everybody's favorite topic is Daniel Goldman. Daniel is a legal analyst for MSNBC, a fellow at Brennan Center for Justice, and a former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, venerable SDNY. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mimi Rocha has said on the show, and I should ask you if you've done mob prosecutions or flipped witnesses before, but she says that mob-affiliated types make great witnesses because they have already deputized themselves to kind of father figures. And in Paul Manafort's case, we know about his close connection to Yanukovych and to Deripaska, whose great patronage, these oligarchs and the former leader of the Ukraine, now in exile in Russia. We know that he was almost sycophantic to them and he enjoyed their largesse. And there's lots of descriptions of him swimming naked with Oleg Deripaska. I refer everyone to Franklin Foer's incredible piece on Paul Manafort. But that once they flip, and this is in Mimi's opinion, they then cathect onto the Weissman types or the Greg Andres types, the people in Manafort's world. And Paul Manafort was, I guess I'd compare him to Michael Cohen, but he was the most reluctant to flip. I mean, it really seemed like he was, I guess what they call in the mob, a stand-up guy, that he really was going to be true to Trump till the end, or true to his Russian puppet masters till the end. So his flip is incredibly meaningful. I guess that's what I mean. And have you flipped witnesses before? Or?
Sure. Mimi was my supervisor in the organized crime unit in the Southern District of New York. And then I became the supervisor of the organized crime unit, actually, after another former guest of yours, Ellie Honig.
Yes.
So you have now the lineage of the organized crime unit in the Southern District of New York. So absolutely. I mean, I've flipped any number of different witnesses, mob witnesses, Russians, involved in Russian organized crime. And I actually would separate it a little bit more in the way, but between blue collar criminals and white collar criminals.
Mm.
The people who are the drug dealers, the mobsters, they know that they're committing a crime. There's no shades of gray. They have made the conscious decision that I'm going to take the risk because I think the benefits are worth it.
Yeah.
And I am a criminal.
Yeah.
Okay. White collar criminals often rationalize things away, convince themselves that what they're doing really isn't that bad, or
everyone does it. Yeah.
That they have created in their mind a sort of fictionalization of why what I'm doing isn't so bad.
Yeah.
The blue-collar cooperators are therefore much better cooperating witnesses because once they agree to cooperate, they've already accepted that they are criminals and that they committed crimes.
And that they're eligible for prison.
Well, I mean, that's obviously, that's the incentive to cooperate.
Yeah.
But just in terms of dealing with witnesses, the white-collar criminals are much harder to deal with from a cooperating perspective because they have this veneer. You have to beat the veneer out of them, the rationalization out of them to get them just to accept the fact that they committed a crime and they are criminals.
Yeah.
And they're also fraudsters.
Yeah.
So they often will try to pull a fast one over the prosecutors and think that they can give a little but keep a little away.
Yeah.
Whereas the blue collar people understand much better, like, it's all or nothing.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what you have to do to cooperate.
Interesting, so, right.
Jim Comey,
I don't know if you read Higher Loyalty. I feel like I'm the only one that the day it came out, I just turned every page. But this is James Comey's sort of memoir book. He says... The blue collars, you say, prosecutions are so much easier because you've also often found heroin on a table. The white collar prosecutions, you're trying to determine state of mind.
Well, after determining whether it's a crime in some cases.
Right.
You know, and then state of mind.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, if this Trump debacle has revealed anything, it's that these white collar crimes have suffused and even, you know, we've had an economy in some cases predicated on money laundering and, of course, tax dodging and the kind of crimes that you have to determine state of mind in. And I think a Paul Manafort, Roger Stone styles himself as demimonde and kind of evil, and he probably knows he's committing crimes. But Paul Manafort, in the communications he's had with his family, the emails that have been revealed, clearly thinks he's living the life. And that, you know, FARA violations are just ways of clipping his wings, and they're not, you know, that he's just managing to get over on the system. Like he's sort of a Bernie Madoff character or just a high flyer who does what everyone does, as you said, and it has been getting away with it for so long. I mean, that's why we have these representations. Franklin Foer says he was suicidal not long ago. That, like, this is a real crisis for him because it's reevaluating his whole life.
Well, and it may go to show why it took Paul Manafort so long to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
He went through a full trial, and he, in somewhat unusual fashion, decided to have 2 trials, which I don't really understand. There doesn't seem to be any value for him in having 2 separate trials. One conviction gets him to jail, so you're giving the government 2 bites at the apple. There's no 2 bites at the apple to get off of a charge.
Yeah.
But it, to me, when I saw him fight this, it really resonated with many of the defendants that I had.
Oh,
because
white-collar defendants.
White-collar defendants, because they just have this mentality that is not rational.
Yeah.
It is not logical. And they have framed everything in a skewed way in order to allow themselves to wake up every morning, look in the mirror, and go do what they're doing. And I think that it just took the realization and the fact of sitting in jail for a few months for Paul Manafort to realize, okay, you know, this is not going anywhere the way that this is going.
Yeah.
And my best chance is I got 2 chances here. It's either a pardon or it's cooperation. And I think he probably recognized that you can't trust this president.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't rely on him giving me a pardon.
Yeah.
And the only other course I have to save my hide from spending the rest of my life in jail is cooperation.
The jig's up, finally.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, it's still, I don't know if you ever read this report, but the 1992 report that fingered him as one of the ringleaders of this torturous lobby. I mean, his daughters were texting each other about the money we have as blood money. We had a sketch on the show by Steve Waltine about the walls. Are they actually moving? It's Paul Manafort's voice. Are they closing in on him? I mean, he's an extraordinary figure in all this.
And even in its own right, and that's what's so crazy about what we're dealing with. I mean, it's a huge deal that someone like Paul Manafort, who has been such a prominent political consultant and key figure in Republican circles for decades, is convicted of crimes and is in jail right now. Yeah. And it feels like because of the larger investigation, it's not getting the sort of important attention that of the significance that it has.
So that's the teaser for today's show. Aren't you tantalized? Don't you want to hear the whole thing? Well, now's your chance. You can sign up now at slate.com/TrumpCast Plus to get every single TrumpCast episode, all of it, no ads. It's only $35 for the first year. Go to slate.com/TrumpCast Plus.